One.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Healing Through Hurt. I'm your host, Maria Wall, and I'm here with my co-host, Autumn Coleman and Rebecca East. Hey, Autumn. Hey, Rebecca. How are you?
Hey, Maria. Fine.
Autumn, how was your move? Autumn left us. She's no longer here on the East Coast with us. She relocated back to Oregon, right?
Right.
So,
Oregon, Portland.
So hopefully you and the babies had a good flight. Autumn is if you all have missed any of our shows, Autumn is having twins. We just lost Autumn. Rebecca, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting for Autumn to call back in, we're gonna get our show started again. Welcome to our show. If you'd like to call in, our number is 646-478-4726. And our topic for this week is going to be an interesting one, I would think. Our topics for this week are simply, and this is a fill-in-the-blank kind of thing, it is you are attracted to be. And you finish the statement. If someone's told you before that, you know, you're really attractive to be, as in, for instance, I always get that I'm really cute to be dark, complected. So a second part of it is you would be attractive if. So tonight I'd like for a lot of callers, especially male callers, on both ends of the spectrum, if you told a female that she's really cute or something to be or she would be if, then we'd like to hear from you. And, of course, if a female has told you that, of course, we want to hear your stories too. This stemmed from last week. I believe we were in our after show. And one of the things that I was talking about was the fact that, and I said, you know, some people listening would probably laugh because they would probably think that it was funny when I said, you know, there's still people out there today, and these are adults, who may make a comment about my darker skin tone. You know, I could be a blackie or a crispy or a midnight or whatever. And, of course, I don't know what it is about people who look like me. Let's put it that way. And why we feel a need to down each other so much. Are we that far gone as a people maybe where we need to make other people look bad or pull them down in order to give our own lack of worth any type of validity or what's going on there? But, you know, tonight I'd like for people to call in and, of course, ladies. I know that I haven't been able to speak to you in a while, Autumn, because of your move, but Becca and I had touched on it a while where we've even been guilty of it to a degree where we've, you know, said that someone was very attractive to be. So we're going to start on that for an issue. Have you ever done it? And if so, you know, what was the scenario that caused you to do it?
Wow. Are you asking for my interjection now, Maria?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I will speak of my experience where I have fallen in the category where I would be attractive if. Now, if I didn't have all this influence coming at me, if I didn't have these, you know, beautiful women in the ads, if I didn't have, you know, the media constantly showing me what I should be, which typically those women are very underweight. They're very, you know, they're close to 6 feet tall, and most all of them are white. Well, I'm white myself, but now they're getting the influx of the Brazilian women, and, you know, so, yes, there's some diversity now, but it's almost not very cool to be white anymore. It's almost not very cool to be black anymore. I don't know. There's just a lot of different messages. Like I was saying earlier, if I didn't have all those things coming at me, I could stand in front of the mirror, butt naked, and say, wow, Rebecca, you're gorgeous. But, I would be more attractive, and I've heard this before, if I had a smaller waistline, if I had a bigger behind, if my head wasn't so big. I have a big head. Well, you know what? That was cured once. This lady, she was telling me that I was so beautiful. I told her, thank you so very much. She was once in the modeling profession years and years ago, and I was joking with her, you know, so I guess this does affect people. I'm like, oh, yeah, haha, thank you for calling me beautiful, but I have a big head. And she laughed at me, and she said, you know, the bigger the head, that's more more dimension to capture on film. So you have a beautiful big head, and I have a beautiful big head, too. So I was able to let that one go, but I just think that there's so much in our society that tends to pick at people. Like I could only imagine me being a beautiful white woman, and I still feel like I don't measure up. How many people walk with their tail between their legs and their head low because they don't measure up to what society's asking for? Unbelievable.
You know, I agree. You know, I agree.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we're having some technical difficulties here because I'm getting a lot of feedback from somewhere. But, you know, it makes you wonder, when people tell you this, you know, are we putting too much faith into what these members of society are saying to us? Because, you know, in hindsight, when I look back and think about some of the people who really caused damage to my self-esteem in my younger years, now as an adult, looking back on it, I'm like, wow, you know, this person was tore up from the floor up and the ceiling down 10 times worse than me. So, you know, it doesn't help now because when I was going through it, I didn't see it that way. But, you know, it is sad that society has put these types of requirements and criteria on people as to what is considered acceptable or beautiful, however you want to say it, or pretty or cute, or, you know, who determines this and what gives them the right, I guess, is another question, you know?
Right. And why does that make somebody less desirable, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there are times when, you know, and I mean, everyone I think has their personal preferences. You know, I tend to be attracted more to lighter-hued men, you know, as opposed to someone that looks closer to my own skin tone. You know, it's just different.
Why is that, Maria?
I think that a lot of it has to do with everything that I went through as a child, to a degree. As an adult, now that I'm getting older, I do tend to look at every man I can, you know, possibly look at and find something sexy in almost all of them. Do I still lean toward one or the other? Yeah, I'm not too sure that it's because I'm actually picking or choosing them, because, you know, for the most part, I'm the one that's chosen. But I do have family members that say, you know, I usually get good-looking men or pretty boy men or whatever you want to call them. But I think that now that I'm older, I think that it's more of a luck of the draw. And for our members in the chat room, I'd like to welcome you. I see we do have visitors in the chat room. If you'd like to call in and chime in on our discussion for the day, pretty much it's fill in the blank. If you've ever been told or you have told someone either of these two statements, then we'd like to hear from you. The first statement is, you are handsome, beautiful, attractive to be, and you fill in the rest. Or, you would be handsome, beautiful, pretty, attractive if. And finish that statement for us. Our call-in number is 646-478-4726. Again, our call-in number is 646-478-4726. I'm sure that many of us are guilty of this to a degree, and many of us have experienced this at one point in time in our lives. And I'm going to put a new spin on it. Whenever someone tells me that, the first thing I think is, are you attracted to me because you really are into me and you want to get to know me and we can possibly develop something? Or is it because you want to have me as a trinket to show off to your friends and family? You know, look at what I have. You know, and that in itself causes a problem because you're going into this relationship or association with doubt. And is there any way for that to be clarified or cleared up to make us feel more comfortable about it if we know that that's, you know, that first impression was, well, you know, you're really this to be that? And what does that say about society as a whole and their view on for African Americans, the darker complexioned individual, or a redheaded individual, or you know, where does this come from, and how do you draw the line? You know,
I think I've had it on both sides. When I was in high school, I was overweight, and I wasn't fat, but I was overweight, and I felt unattractive because of my weight. And I never had anyone tell me that I was unattractive. It was just everything that I saw, you know, videos, and everyone was skinny, and you know, I felt that I would be attractive once I got to that size. So I had my self-esteem issues back then. But when I moved, got out of high school and went to college and moved to the East Coast, I lost a lot of weight, like over 50 pounds. And I felt good about myself. I felt attractive. I didn't have any issues with my weight or the way that I looked until I met men, and they'll tell me that I'm too skinny, that they want a black man wants a woman with meat on their bones. Or, you know, I started seeing the video girls that were on TV back when I was in high school turned into these big booty women with big, huge breasts, big butts, big thighs, and I was a petite, skinny girl, you know, what I always wanted to be since yay high. And I never really got into that whole light skin, dark skin thing. I think I got over that stage. It was difficult because my mom and my sisters were all light skin, lighter complected African Americans, and I'm more of a brown skin, like a color crayon brown. So I had got over that a long time ago, but I always always wanted to be darker, like a really chocolate dark color. And I just thought that dark skin was just so beautiful that it made me feel, it would make me feel more black if I was darker. But I guess, you know, and a lot of people say that was odd, you know, that I wanted to be darker. You know, I even wanted my children, if I had children, I wanted them to be dark. And it's because I saw that, I think that dark skin is beautiful. But really, as I mature, it's skin is skin is skin. You know, people are people. And I think when you put too much emphasis on weight and color, it robs you of getting to know that person, or just appreciating that person for who they are and their very essence and their very being. You know, being caught up in appearances, they can be deceiving. But back to what I was saying about the, you know, I'm skinny and petite and the right size. I'm 5'1". I was a good weight for my size. Wasn't overweight. I wasn't 115 pounds like the numbers, like the scale. I don't know what it's called exactly. said that I was supposed to be, but I wasn't overweight by far. I was the perfect size for my height. But I ran into a man who told me that it was actually a light-skinned man, a light-colored black man, and I was never attracted to light-complected men. But I ended up dating him, and he told me that I was cute. He usually dates light-skinned women, but I'm an exception because I'm cute. And that was the first time.
You feel special, right?
Yeah, that was the first time someone said that to me. And he was about 3 feet taller than me. And every man that I dated was dark skinned and over 6 foot. But that shocked me, and that brought it on the stage of me feeling insecure. But just for someone to say that to me, someone that I wasn't even attracted to, you know, he had a nice looking face, but as far as he didn't represent my image of a man. I feel like a man is supposed to be big and muscular, and he was a short yellow man, and it just didn't fit. But anyway, he told me that I was not attractive because he said I was an exception, basically, because he usually dates light-skinned women, so he said light-skinned women are more attractive. That didn't really fit to me too bad, but what really got to me was when he would always make comments about, you know, videos about women being thick with big butts and big thighs and big breasts, and I'm petite. And, you know, that's what you see now. You see the big booty girls and all that stuff. That's what's attractive, so they say, for, you know, African-American women. Well, you know, when I got to to Virginia, I noticed that what was attractive was a lot of overweight African-American women with the big booties and stuff like that. But I think that's a misconception because African Americans are the highest in diabetes. African American women are dying more at rapid rates for heart attacks, heart disease, diabetes, because I think they believe that this thing about being sick is cute, so it's okay to be your size when you're unhealthy. So it's like, I think that is a serious problem, and I know that's another show, but that right there really bothered me. I started feeling that, you know, I needed to have a bigger booty and have bigger breasts and bigger thighs to be attractive, and that kind of, you know, this me being petite was not in. It wasn't attractive. So it's like once you buy into what everybody else thinks, and you don't have a self concept, a positive self concept of yourself, and comfortable who you are, it can be damaging because because you're going by what the media says. And then I think about being in high school, just all these different types of changes that happened to me. I wanted to be skinny. I wanted to be, you know, just. I think it's good to start teaching people at a young age to just and to love the skin that they're in. You know, you've got these, and it's very heartening. You know, just the other day I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were sitting down watching a Rihanna video. And Rihanna is probably like, what, 20, 21, and she started off younger or whatever. And we were talking about how she's on the TV show dancing half naked. But I said, do you remember when we were in high school that what we were looking at was Brandy and Monica and, you know, 702? They weren't dancing half naked, but they were selling millions of records. And it's like things just got drastically worse. And these are the people that you idolize. These are the people that you think are what you're supposed to be. And they're representing this image, and people, if you let your children watch it, they're getting fed this and they're not accepting who they are because everybody doesn't look like that. You know, everybody doesn't have a big booty. Everybody doesn't have big thighs, or, you know, everybody doesn't have long weave hair. You know, it's heartening. But I just think that it's really heartening, and I think that it's just getting drastically worse, and that we need to start. I think there should be like a self-esteem class in school, that, you know, a self-appreciation day, because we need to start instilling self-esteem and self-love to our women, our children, men and women, so they won't be so mixed up and fall for all of the drama, all of the demons that are out there. So, you know, that's my take on it.
Autumn, I'd like you to talk about being a black woman who goes against the grain, and you don't get the long hair weaves, and you actually prefer and do very, very well wear a short haircut, like a short hairstyle, and how much flack you get for that. I mean, you do get flack, right?
I do. I get flack from, it's actually very, everyone can't wear a short haircut, but I wear very well. And, you know, I don't wear the long weave. I did it before, and it was really superficial. It just didn't fit me. Some people are, like, meant to, you know, certain hairstyles fit up certain people, but I would get a lot of flack, especially from men. They would just be like, well, why did you cut your hair off? You know, I like your hair long, but when they see my style, my haircut is sharp, and they're like, they have to say, well, you know, it does look good short, but why do men prefer long hair? Why does a woman have to have long hair to be, you know, attractive? And I just never got into the whole, I never really clung on to the long weave, because I always felt that it was so stressful to try to be somebody else, that if I could get to a point where I accepted who I was and didn't have to change and didn't feel insecure about it, I want to try to be that. And it took me a long time to get there. You know, my hair grows really long, but I cut it off because I like my hair short. And
so, Autumn, do you feel like there's black women in the black community that kind of, you know, curl their nose up at you like, she's bald headed? Do you feel that way?
I feel like black women who get weaves, I think that you know, really, I really can't comment on it, and I mean, I can't say something that would be fair, because it's your hair and you wear your hair the way you want to wear it. But I would say that some of them feel like having long hair is what makes them attractive, because you fit into the corporate world with having long hair like a white woman, or having long hair makes you more attractive to men. Having short hair, either your hair can't grow, or either you're a lesbian.
Right.
It's some people, you know, it's so many different reasons, but it's so many different things that you can say, but bottom line is you wear your hair the way you want to wear it. When I did have my hair weave, it looked good on me. It looked real good on me, and that's how I wanted to wear my hair, but I prefer a short haircut, so I can't say that just because you wear weave, you're being superficial, or you this way and that way. But one thing that I did notice is that, like, when African-American women will come and wear braids, and they will go and they'll come to work, certain type of braids will seem too ethnic, and it will become, I think that they will be judged in stereotypes more than a woman with a short haircut.
Within the black community, it's too ethnic for who? Because my name is Rebecca, and I'm considered to be white, and you know, so I just was curious, who?
So when Lauryn Hill came out, she changed the whole. I believe she changed the whole. Just like Wesley Snipes came out and made the dark skinned black men the thing, and light skinned men were out. When Lauryn Hill came, she made it okay to be a dark skinned woman with natural hair. You know, she made it okay to be dark. To be, you know, it was considered beautiful, and her pureness and her just, you know, she didn't have the weave, she didn't have the light skin, she didn't have the big booty. She came out just a woman and just appreciating herself. That really changed the face of the black woman, and I think it changed the face of women being okay with who they are. But there's, just like there's still racism today, it's still a lot of issues with, you know, the weave and the natural look and stuff like that. So it's just, I think it's always going to be an issue.
See, that made me think of a line in one of her songs where she says, getting hair weaves like Europeans and fake nails done by Koreans. You know,
yeah.
Getting back to what you're saying, you know, about the long weaves and that trying to imitate, you know, a white woman. And what does that mean and where does that come from, you know?
That's just like that movie Good Hair with Chris Rock, but I also think they need to make a movie about being dark skin and light skin and brown skin, because that's always been an issue. You know, I can remember, you know, somebody in my family telling me that they got a job because they were light skinned and they were less qualified. They were light skinned black and they were less qualified than a dark-skinned black that had a master's degree and several years of experience, but this person would represent the company, and this was a black company, better because she looked more white. So it's...
What company was that?
Never
mind. I was going to ask what company it was. I'll ask you out there.
No, we're not going to get into that, but let me interject for a moment. Autumn, when you were talking, you had said quite a few things. Let me go backtrack a little bit. When you said that back in the day when we had the videos, you know, the women were dressed and you know, the videos were just fine. Now, let's go back. Now, what happened is, for me, now this has been my observation, is that over the years, in order for a woman to become a superstar, or the ones that we hear on the radio the most, they get the most play, but then they wear the least amount of clothes. And then the women are basically following the same types of patterns where you have to look like a Beyonce or have the pretty eyes or the light skin and the long hair and the this and that. When on the other end, now this is going to be a topic that's going to get some listeners up in arms, and I really don't care, but on the other end, no harm, but there's about one or two male performers that I can tolerate looking at, because for the most part, they are the most looks-challenged bunch of people I have ever seen. It's like the criteria for a male star is to be god-awful unattractive, where the requirements for a female are you have to be half-dressed, be able to shake your, you know, your booty, and have, you know, T&A all over the place. Well, you know what? For me, as the women, you know what? We like to see some DNA. So, you know, the bottom line is simple. What's good for one should be good for the other. So in my opinion, you know, they have to do better, because right now it's really, again, it's still very one-sided. And another thing that I wanted to throw this out here, though, is the same way that fellas now wear the oversized pants that hang down to the ground, and they say that they're expressing themselves. What do you think? And, you know, and I want the listeners to understand right now that we're two African-American women here, and we also are joined by a Caucasian female. And the reason why we're speaking on this is because my hair is natural. It's not natural. I do relax it because at some point I just like it's more manageable for me. But I can wear it long, I can wear it short, and if I feel like it, if I want to put a few tracks in, I will do that too to enhance whatever style I'm trying to accomplish. But my hair is about, now it's about 6 inches or so long, and I'm going to let it grow out to see if I can tolerate it over the summer. If not, I'm going to chop it off. But do you think that now the issue is, the same way that the fellas wear the pants to the ground, now the girls have to have their hair to their behind. Is it a statement that they're trying to make? Do they even realize that the common stereotype is that, you know, are you trying to be closer to a Caucasian woman, or is it about something else? Because, you know, during the day, when I'm out and about, it seems like these young girls' hair is getting longer and longer and longer. It's between that or the infamous ugly, cheap wigs that they're wearing now. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what happened to our hair, whether it be relaxed or natural or whatever. What's going on now to make us want to either wear these god-awful wigs or put in tracks that are so long? You know, how do they even wash it nowadays? You know what I mean? So where's that breakdown at, and what is it something now that they're seeing every single day where they're starting to be conditioned to believe that that is how they have to look, you know, as opposed to them finding themselves?
I personally think, and this is just my opinion, Adam Coleman's opinion, I personally think women who wear the long weave hair, that I think they feel insecure with wearing their natural hair, and I think that they're trying to be white, that they think that white, long flowing white hair, long flowing straight hair makes them more becoming as opposed to wearing their natural hair. And I think that they feel that it's not as attractive, you know, and that's what I personally believe. Now,
what about the younger girls? Do you think that that's true for them? The younger girls, about younger girls, is maybe 19, 18, 16 that are doing it.
Yeah, I feel like they're idolizing these women on TV to be that way. You know, I mean, it all, I think that they're trying to be white. I think the younger women are, it's a misconception. Like, I personally feel that that Rihanna, she doesn't look good in long hair because her head is really big, and her hair looks good with the short cut. So she wears her hair to fit her face. That's a perfect example of someone wearing their hair, wearing a hairstyle to fit their face. You can look at pictures of her with longer hair, and she doesn't look right. It just doesn't look as becoming as her short haircut. So she has no choice but to wear her hair short. But I feel if it looked good long, that she would promote that image of long, flowing hair. But it just doesn't look good on.
I want to tell our listeners again, our number is 646-478-4726. And, gentlemen, if you're listening, I'd like for you to call in to give us your take on the long hair versus short hair issue, and is it to the point where you're really impressed with it? Because if you're in that heat of passion, I'm almost sure that, you know, when you get running your fingers through her hair, if she'll let you even get that close to her hair, you know, you'd be feeling the tracks and the you know, the lumps and the bumps of the clips or however it's in there. So, gentlemen, call in. I know that my son and his wife usually listen. If you guys are listening tonight, I'd welcome you to call in, 646-478-4726. I'd like to get both of your opinions because my daughter-in-law is very fair-skinned with very long hair. And my son, you know, I'd like to get a male's opinion. And, you know, son, if you're listening, you would be the first male to really call in and represent, so to speak, because I don't know why the men aren't calling in. They have a lot of comments after the fact, but they won't call in and give us their opinions online. But I really do want to hear from some males tonight. And some ladies, if you want to call in, and give your opinion, let me know, because I'd like to know why you wear the long hair. And it's the young people and older women. Why do you do it? And what is it doing to your hair beneath those weaves and wigs? What's going to happen to your real hair? So give us a call. And, again, you know, these are things that we're talking about where you would be attractive if. So that means you would be do you feel more attractive if you have the longer flowing hair, if you have
the lighter
if
skin.
You know, the lighter skin, what length are you willing to go to?
And I want to know about what is it about women with the big booties and the big thighs and big breasts who are overweight and you know, at a risk of getting diabetes because of their being overweight and thickness cute as opposed to a petite woman who's in shape?
Well, you know, it's six in one hand.
I don't understand. I always thought that, you know, it really got me. I always thought that a woman who was in shape and had her size, not only is it attractive, but it's healthy, you know. That shows that she's in good health. And you know, she cares about her body.
Well, you know, I mean, you can have weight on you and still be relatively healthy. I mean, unless you're terribly, terribly out of weight for something, out of shape for something other than a health condition or something, that's a whole other issue. But you do have people who are within their weight limits who run and jog every day who can also drop dead from a heart attack. So we're not necessarily saying that.
I personally feel that's attractive.
What's attractive?
A woman who takes care of herself, who is tight. You know, I know a lot of women who take care of themselves, go into the gym. They have stomach muscles, nice firm butts, and, you know, flat stomach, muscular stomach. And, you know, they're not, you know, jiggling, you know, it's not here and there. But I'm not saying that a woman that's overweight is not attractive, but why, what is up with the black men with the big thick women, or why do they prefer a thick woman over a small petite woman?
Well, I think again, that's going to be something that I think that there are men out there that go both ways. If you go, a lot of times when I'm down south, I notice that it's obviously it's more for a preference to the women that have a little bit, as they say, meat on their bones or whatever. If you go, of course, you go further north, it's a totally different issue. So, you know, again, but the question pretty much is when. We're changing it up a little bit. Say, like, when these people get up in the morning, they look in the mirror, and they're trying to figure out, hey, I would look so much better if. You know, we could go a step further and say, you know, what is the point of some of the heavier girls, the younger girls as well? No, I can't even say that because I see some older women who do it as well, who feel as though if they flaunt their TNA, you know, it's already there. I mean, it's, we can't miss it, regardless whether it's covered or uncovered. But the bottom line is that it doesn't need to be showing any more of it than we already know is there because it's evident. But and in the same breath, the young girls now, they can be stick, you know, thin as a stick, and then they're still now, you know, getting clothes that are smaller, and everything is hanging out or hanging over. Looking not, you know, neat and together, but it's still, they somehow still want to make it look sloppy. And I'm trying to figure out, is this the new norm now, or did someone tell them that makes them more attractive to, you know, a male or whatever? Because to me, if you dress like a loose woman, you're going to attract that type of a man. You know, if you dress with some dignity and respect, you may get more attention from a gentleman who respects a woman that looks that way. You know, what's that old adage, you can't make a whore a housewife? You know, and I think that these young ladies especially, need to understand that it's all about how you carry yourself and how you look. If you walk into my company and everything is hanging out and I see everything, your jewels and everything else, that's not going to work for me. It's not going to work in my business. It's not going to work anywhere. I see companies now where these young kids are getting off from work, and they're actually coming out, you know, with their pants hanging down below their behinds and things like that. And, you know, I guess they wake up in the morning, they look in the mirror and tell themselves that, you know, I'm going to be sexy if I wear my pants like this as opposed to having them up on my waist where they belong. And somebody has said that this is okay. And I think that one of my concerns now is that there are so many of these younger people out here who don't have a role model, because a lot of these older people, you have these old, overgrown thugs, and you have these older women who are past their prime 10 times over, and they're still trying to live like they were back in 1942 when they were in high school. You know, it's getting to be ridiculous out here. I think that a lot of people have lost their sense of self, and they don't really know who they are anymore, you know?
It's because of the media. It's because of what they see on TV. I mean, just like I said, Brandy sold a whole bunch of albums, was always number one. She didn't take off her clothes. She wasn't shaking and bouncing her butt and showing her thighs and stuff at that time. And that was what I grew up on. Now the young girls are idolizing these women who are taking off their clothes, and sex is selling. And then you wonder why, you know, HIV is spreading and girls are having kids at young ages, and why men treat women the way that they do is because of the way they represent themselves. I personally, I don't know if you know this, but I don't know, and I'm not, you know, this is just my observation. I do not see white men or Latino men, or I don't see them making songs calling their women bitches and hoes. But African-American...
Hold on, Autumn. We have a caller coming in. Autumn, we have a caller coming in. Hold on a moment.
Okay.
My name is Tara, and I'm Cassandra. Well, I'm Maria's daughter-in-law, and I just wanted to chime in on the situation. I heard I heard you all speaking about the, you know, the fact that there are no role models for us as... Well, not us, but our children at this time, and I completely agree with that, and I believe that all goes into the fact that, I mean, that plays into the question and the topic that you all are speaking about, which is why people would feel they would be more attractive if they were lighter skin, or if they were thicker, if they were skinnier, and all that, because we don't have what we have to look up to right now, scantily clad women. There's nothing left to the imagination. A lot of the women are impressing the males when the women are the one who are actually going out and buying their CDs and, you know, supporting their careers. And I think that, like I said, all that plays into why women have this distorted image of what they should look like. We have all this stuff to look at, you know, in the media, and a lot of people don't realize that this stuff is not real. These women don't really look like that. No one is flawless. You have Photoshop, you have, you know, lighting, makeup, touch-ups, surgeries, everything. These people don't really look like that, but a lot of women strive to push themselves to look like this, and they don't understand that they're reaching for some goal that is really not attainable.
Right. That's absolutely right. And then, Rebecca, I want you to touch on when you said that you have to have a bigger butt as a white woman, and, you know, what is that about?
Well, again, you know, it's a lot of the media, and, well, we can back up. We've been talking about Rihanna and what's going on today, but what disgusts me more than anything is Britney Spears. That girl kills me. Like, she cannot go to a music show, you know, any video award without having some kind of leotard with rhinestones, you know, with her. You know, she has a big butt. I don't know, something's in the water. White women tend to grow bigger butts nowadays. I don't know if it's just because I'm just noticing, but I grew up in Northeast Portland, where it's, you know, of the black communities, It's where the predominantly where most black people reside, and never really had a butt. I've been kind of athletic, you know, nice big legs, and you know, nice looking, but not a huge, you know, bubbly butt. Well, what I would hear constantly when, you know, before I became of age to realize that these men were full of beans and smoke was, you're really attractive to be white, and you're the only white girl I've ever talked to. Really? You know, am I supposed to be impressed? You know, the same guy who told me that was cheating on me with a white woman who was 300 pounds and ended up leaving me for her. Well, I broke up with him, but he's now with her, and she had a nursing degree, so he could sit his lazy butt at home and, you know, make love to a 300-pound woman in the name of her money. But then again, he didn't talk to white women. So I don't know. Like, do I get all wrapped up about me not having more booty? Sure, I do a little bit, but in the end, I have to look at myself. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm a white woman. I have beautiful olive skin. I have, you know, exotic eyes, beautiful cheekbones. I have a lot of great things going, but, you know, it is what it is. And
Tara, let me ask Tara something, because I had mentioned earlier that you have a lighter hue and you have the long hair, and all of you is natural. I know that because, ladies, I don't know if you heard that, but this is my daughter-in-law. So, you have two boys, and we both know that Mr. 4-year-old and Mr. 7-year-old, they like to jump around to, what's the girl's name, Beyonce, and
mm-hmm.
of course now it's Lady Gaga. So anyway, I realize that you and my son may keep them very grounded, but that is something that, do they know? Are they differentiating now if someone's not as attractive? Have you noticed that? Or I know that we've gone through some issues, you know, with like peer pressure and things, because I know that Mr. 7-year-old is in school now. So is he coming home being more aware of looks? Have you noticed that at all since he's been in school?
Not as of yet. He seems to be... you know, of course, we're military-related, so there's a lot of different races, a lot of different, you know, ethnicities and cultures going on, and he seems to, you know, accept people for who they are. Right now, he doesn't differentiate. We had the issue with race when someone brought it up to him, you know, in pre-K, but other than that, he has never, you know, mentioned that the difference between a light-skinned female or a dark-skinned female or a white female as opposed to a black female. People are just people to him right now at 7. And I appreciate the fact that we are a military family that does get to grow up around different races and cultures of people, because then they won't be as closed-minded as people who grow up around, you know, people of their race only.
Right. And, you know, you and I have talked before, you know, we joke a lot, but could you touch on the fact that how society has treated you as being an extremely fair-skinned African-American female? You know, what has your experience been? Because the good part is that we sat down and we talked before where me being on one end of the spectrum and you being on the other, you know, tell us some of the things that you've had to go through and that you've experienced because of you being very, you know, extremely light.
Well, a lot of times people assume that because you're light-skinned that you automatically have the upper hand or the advantage in life, and that's not necessarily true, because growing up I was picked on a lot because of my complexion and because of my hair. I didn't look like the rest of the people in my neighborhood. So I was, you know, they were African-American. I was African-American, but they didn't see me as that. They saw me as someone different, so I was white to them. And, you know, it's ignorance based on the parents' teaching. But for me, it was hard for me to accept. I didn't like being light-skinned as a child because I didn't understand why I didn't fit in with my neighbors or why, you know, I was always called white girl. And to me, you know, I knew I wasn't white. But to hear that every day at school from people who did not look like me, it was very discouraging. And it wasn't because I didn't, at the time, I didn't have a sense of self. I was a little girl, but like I said, I was not comfortable being light-skinned just for the simple fact that I knew that every day that I went to school, I would have people make fun of me, and I didn't have, you know, a lot of people did not like me because of that. People would walk by and pull my hand just because it was, you know, it was there, and nobody understood how that felt. And people to this day, I can sit down and have a conversation. And, you know, just like when we talked, I said, you know, for you, you were a darker-skinned woman, but for me, it was almost the same kind of, it was almost the same kind of problems that I faced being light-skinned, because for us to be such a diverse race, you would think that, you know, we would be more understanding of that, but we get,
right.
I've gotten more discrimination and hate from people of my own race and ethnicity than anyone
exactly.
else.
Yep, exactly.
That's really interesting. I never had the complexion problem because I wasn't dark nor light. So I was just an average brown-skinned woman, black woman. So I never got any names. But I did know, I did notice that, you know, when I was in school, the light-skinned girls were considered the most beautiful because they looked more white. And it didn't really bother me because I never was considered ugly, but I wasn't considered the most beautiful because I wasn't light-skinned. But it's what you're exposed to, and like I said, I feel that we need to just, as a people, I think we need to try to bring up the issue of what we're promoting on TV. You know, like I was saying, I have never seen any videos of white men or Spanish men or Asian men calling their women, you know, bitches and hoes and saying, oh, she got a big fat butt. And, you know, it's always, you know, I never see that, but it's accepted among the black community. And why? Why is it?
Well, the black women will sit around and bob their head and sing the tune right along with them. I've seen that. So, you know, it's like, where are people going to draw the lines and say, hey, that is not cool, and I really don't, you know, want to bob my head or know the words to a song like that, you know?
That's true, because I always wonder, well, you know, I agree completely with you saying that our race is the only race that will disrespect our women, and for me, I agree with that. You know, men, we do allow our men to disrespect us, but at the same time, what part are the women playing? If you have women who, you know, walk around scantily clad and they carry themselves like whores, they act like whores, they look like whores, that's how they're going to be treated. And a lot of women will degrade themselves just to be accepted by men. So if this is the kind of behavior we have out here, then why should men respect this? And for women like me who, you know, I think I'm attractive and I think that I have a lot to offer, you know, as a person, a human being, but as far as me getting out there trying to, you know, get negative attention just because I want attention from a man or I want to be seen or I want to be heard, I don't think that I don't have to jump through those hoops because I demand respect. And I think that's the reason why I have the advantage that I do. And I'm not saying I'm the best example or that I'm the, you know, everything that I've done is right, but I do carry myself in a way where I'm, you know, I'm considered a young lady. Nobody can say that, you know, they've seen me doing this or they've seen me doing that. I don't carry myself in that way. But then when you have a whole lot of women who do, so therefore majority of the men feel like they don't have to respect us.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I remember I had got to the point when I was dating that short, light-skinned guy that he had me thinking that I was too skinny, and I would gain weight to to try to get the bigger booty or try to get the bigger breasts, but then I was getting too big. So it was like, I just said, you know, forget it. I like me. I like my short haircut. I like my petite body, and I'm not going to change for nobody. And that helped me a lot, and that also allowed me to be able to accept who I was and accept my natural beauty. And, I mean, I personally get more compliments for, you know, my smile and my eyes and, you know, it's more, I don't walk around with my breasts hanging out and my, you know, tight pants on and all that, but my natural beauty is what I get compliments on. My, you know, my facial, you know, the way I look. But I kind of feel sorry for girls, like, for instance, my sister, she's 13 and she's light skinned and she has long hair. And her friends are dark skinned, and she feels that she is more attractive than them because of the way she looks, and it's because of what she sees on TV. And I can imagine them feeling kind of inferior to her because of that. And you know, what do you do? What do you do when all you see is fair-skinned Barbie dolls or fair-skinned, you know, we got the new Disney movie out with the brown-skinned girl, but what do you do when that's, you only can buy your kids dolls that are really fair-skinned? You know, they're just
right.
Trying to come out with more. You know, what do you do? What do you do with that? And I worry that...
And be parents, you have to... Especially if you have, I don't have a girl, so I can't say what it's like, but I know if I had a girl, there would be a point where I would have to come in and say, okay, this is what society says you should look like, this is what the media says you should look like, but this is what real people look like. And you have to instill something in your children to make them feel like, regardless of how they look, that they cannot look like these celebrities. These celebrities don't even look like they come across, you know, the screen to look. And, you know, like I said, you were speaking about being light-skinned and having big breasts and a big butt. For me, I'm light-skinned. I have a butt and I have breasts. I would give my breasts away for free if I could. Like, I prayed for them when I didn't have any, and then I got some, and it was like, okay, I have enough now. So, you know, sometimes people think that just because you have breasts and you have a butt, that person might feel secure in who they are. And that's not necessarily true either, because you can, like I said, I have both. And there's times where I wish I didn't have, you know, the size breasts that I do, or I wish that, I won't say I wish I had any, didn't have any at all, but, you know, sometimes, you know, a lot of people will wish for something that they don't have. And then when you have it, you realize it's not as big of a deal as you made it seem to be.
Right, exactly.
One thing
with that.
One thing that that I wanted to also touch on is the fact that, yeah, we have the videos and all of this, but then, like I think I started touching on it last week, a lot of times I can have grown adults make fun of my skin tone, and those same grown adults are relaying those messages to their children when they go home. So if they're doing that, it's not only in the videos. The videos are more or less, they're just validating what some of these kids are learning right in their own household. You know, a lot of households, we as a race of people are segregated among ourselves. You know, Autumn, you were the one that, when I was younger, I said, you know, maybe had I just been that brown person, you know, my life would be so much simpler if I was just brown. Because I always thought growing up there was the brown people were just the ones in the middle. They were the antagonists, you know. They were the ones that kept everything going, but they were the majority. And then you had those of us on the darker end and then the light-skinned ones and somewhere in between, because I've come across so many very fair-skinned people who said that they would love to trade my skin tone. And I would say, if I could have yours, I would take yours. And to this day, I mean, I realize that I'm fierce and wonderful as I am, but
there are days when I'm like, you know, I wonder what would have happened had I been lighter. You know, what would life have been like, you know, and what would life have been like had I had some more reinforcement coming up to say, you know, it's more than just ignore everything everyone says, you know, when you need someone to be more, give you a little bit more backing than that when you're young. And it took me a long time. And you know, I still do struggle with it sometimes, because sometimes that little child inside with the inferiority complex does come back. And when they come, you know, when she comes out, I just have to put her back at bay. But it's kind of interesting that when we have these types of conversations, it seems like we are a race that still does not like, you know, one another. We don't like ourselves. And I'm not saying that, I know someone had said earlier that, you know, we're a race where the men do disrespect the women. Now, there are other cultures where it's part of their culture for the woman to be the inferior individual. And, you know, there are places where they're still fighting it, where they can give the women their equal rights. So if she doesn't have, the first child isn't a male or something, the woman is reprimanded for that, and maybe even death and things like that. But here, again, I believe, I don't know which one of you had said it, but we did a show a few weeks ago where it was like, you know, claim your role in all of this. Admit to your role and forgive yourself. Because a lot of times within this particular community, there's a lot of dual responsibility going on. But, you know, sometimes people aren't willing to admit their role in something. But, you know, it's hard it's interesting that so many people across the board, young and old, wake up in the morning, go to that mirror and say, you know, this is what I'm going to do to make myself look better or more appealing to whomever they're trying to impress. And the question is, who do you think that they're trying to impress? Is it all about personal feeling better, or is it that they're actually out there trying to be someone else? Anybody can chime in on that, because that's the part, who are they changing for is the question.
I personally think that they're changing just to, you know, appease the men, because a lot of things, like I said earlier, you have the women who take the female singers who take their clothes off and all that. Most of the people who are by their fan base and, you know, who are buying their CDs are women, and we don't want to see that. You know, that it's, they're more out there to appeal to the males. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of the time the women get lost, because, you know, even though we have come as far as we've come, we still are inferior as a gender. And when you look at women who are, you know, falling victim to these standards that they think they have to live up to, that's when, you know, it just makes the situation worse for everybody, for every generation that is, you know, to come behind that. And I think that, like I said, it's less about pleasing yourself and more about pleasing the people who see you. And I think that no better person would be able to answer that than a male, which is sitting right next to me. And he's going to go ahead and chime in right now on that.
Oh, we got our first male. Yay!
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, hello, ladies.
Good evening.
Hello. So go ahead, give us the male point of view from all of this. Make us understand what the problem is. And, I mean, don't hold back. We want to know. Just tell us what the problem is or how you see it as a man.
Yeah, I can't speak for every male, but, you know, a lot of the things that go on as far as in the entertainment-wise, it's a lot of, I think a lot of young females that are coming up, they really need a solid role model besides what they see on BET and MTV. I think what has happened as a society, and it goes for males and females as well, but I think that the MTV network and the BET network has become more important than the college and the university, to whereas you know, you try to emulate what you see on television instead of emulating what you see around you. As far as, you know, let's take Barack Obama as an example. You know, how many people is he their role model, or Michelle Obama? You know, a lot of females would rather be Beyonce than be Michelle Obama, which is crazy to me. I can't comprehend that logic, but that's how the society is today, and it's been like that for a while. And as far as men liking a certain color of a woman or body type, a lot of people have preferences like that, and you know, it's hard to change somebody once they have a preference. You know, it's like if your favorite color is red, you know, you might settle for a blue every now and again, but you know, red is always going to be your favorite. Everybody has preferences in anything, you know, including people that they're attracted to. That's just the way life is. As far as discriminating against a person that doesn't fit your preference, now that's wrong. Especially when it's set for in a business standpoint, you know, you should never discriminate somebody because of their color, race, religion, or anything like that. But it happens.
How is it that some men can approach a woman and say, oh, you know, I'll talk to you, but you're the exception of the rule, but because you should know that you don't have these assets, so therefore I'm going to still be in your face, but you should feel inferior. Like, if I wasn't your preference, why did you stop and talk to me? Move on. You know?
Well, I mean, at certain times a woman would have something, a certain thing that a man might want, or he thinks that he could need or get something that he needs from that particular woman. Basically, if a guy says that to you, he's saying that, look, you're not going to be somebody that I would want to be with or marry. You're just somebody that I want to have as a sex toy, you know. And I wouldn't accept that or even, you know, take on further conversations with a person like that, you know, unless you want to be somebody's sex toy, you know. I don't know, but guys could say that, and a lot of times when they say stuff like that, they're comfortable enough to say it because they've gotten away with it many times before, you know. So
I agree.
That's why that happened.
So let me ask you this, though. We were talking about earlier how these young girls, the clothes is getting less and less. They're showing more of everything that they have to offer that should be saved for, you know, your partner, your life partner, or your husband, or whomever. And then with the hair is starting to get progressively longer and longer and longer. When you're in the company of your fellow male friends, is that something that they're finding appealing, or is it something that they're finding, you know, this is like you're a walking billboard to tell me, you know what, you're the type of person that, you know, you can be my eye candy today, but tomorrow I'm going to move on to something else. Is it something that would make a man want to retain this woman, or is it automatically telling him she's a high-maintenance sister and, you know, she may be good for the moment, but she's not someone that I want to, you know, spend the rest of my life with because I know the majority of my paycheck may be going into her upkeep? I mean, do your fellow male friends find it attractive, or what are we missing here? I mean, is it something to it that we're missing, or, you know?
It's for guys that I work with, when they see stuff like that, I work with a lot of guys who go out to clubs and whatnot and are around, you know, females all the time, and they see stuff like that, and they understand that they know they can see past the facade of, you know, all the hair done and the nails done and everything. And a lot of guys, they just know that, okay, if you come, if a female comes to them and they have everything, you know, if they approach them like, you know, I need this done, I need that done, and I'm not talking to you, unless you guys make this much money, I need you to buy me this and buy me that. I mean, that game goes both ways, and the guys that I know, they don't take those types of women serious as somebody that they could spend the rest of their life with, you know? They look for more of a stable female that has a job and, you know, can take care of herself and is a leader, somebody who could take care of things when the man of the house is gone, you know? Because, you know, with me being in the military, you know, we get deployed and we need it comes times when you need somebody to take care of stuff at home. And if you have a chick that's constantly wanting to go out to the clubs and constantly wanting to get her hair and nails done instead of paying the bills, then, you know, that's not somebody that you know, guys that I work with are looking for. You know, I mean, it's pretty to look at. I mean, they're pretty to look at, but you don't have to have the fake nails and the fake hair to be taken serious, you know. It's more than just what you look like. Then what else do you bring to the table? It's kind of like that, you know?
Right. So, you know, and I hope that we do have quite a few, you know, female listeners. And, again, our number 646-478-4726 if you'd like to chime in. But, you know, it's good that we have that male perspective. So, ladies, you're hearing it from a male now that all of that the bottom line is that if you have to put that much money and buy that much to make you, you know, look like something, what's to happen when you don't have the money for all of that? You know, I think that is it safe to say that a male likes to have some sense of some feel of a natural type beauty, that beauty that's going to be there when they're 40, 50, you know, 60 years old, that's someone that they choose to make, you know, their lifelong partner. You know, they want something that has, I guess I'm saying longevity to it. Would that be a fair assessment that, you know, men are really looking for someone that's going to be there for the long haul that they can depend on just as much as she would be expecting him to be there for her?
Yeah, I think so, but it's more than just on a physical standpoint. It's more of a, you know, a mental standpoint and a how well can she do on her own, you know, as far as taking care of the household and how much is she going to contribute to the household and, you know, how much of the – how mature is she going to be and if she's going to continue to grow and evolve as, you know, the years go on, because I don't know, I don't think I've met a dude yet that wants a female that when she's in her 40s acts like she's still, you know, 18. You know, that's never been, you know, a selling point for somebody who wants to be in a long-term marriage, you know, and it's women out there that's like that, you know, but and that's a shame, but a lot of stuff starts from what they learn when they're, you know, at home.
And exactly.
What do they get when they're young? You know, because if you don't have the, if you let, you know, what you see on TV be your role model, unless you're watching C-SPAN and MSNBC, you know, you're gonna go down the wrong path. You know, you're bound to, because you'll be stuck more on a physical attractiveness and appearance rather than a intellectual and educational foundation, you know. And educational and intellectual minds can go along with physical attractiveness, and they can work well together. But if you it's like if you buy a brand new car, a brand new Mercedes-Benz, and it's clean and it looks good and wax job and everything, but it doesn't have a motor in it, then what do you really have, you know?
Good analogy. <Yeah. laughs> That's a good way to put it. You know, it's just the shell. It's an empty shell.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. I mean, it's just a shell. So that's a good way to put it, you know? And, you know, I think that to a degree, maybe some of the music industry needs to do more, put more emphasis on, you know, if you want to be here, you need to get your education and do something to give you something to fall back on in the event that the bells and whistles of entertainment do not work, or to let these young girls know that this is not real. You know, I'd like to see Beyonce do a show, and Rihanna and all of them, where they start off, this is me, this is what you all know, and then they go through the process of taking all of that makeup and everything off and let us see them in their natural state and say, you know what, this is the real me. What you all are trying to emulate is not real. You know, I get up in the morning at 4 o'clock, I'm in the makeup chair from 4 to 8 or however long it takes, you know, to make them look the way that they do. And, you know, most of the times we know that Beyonce and her little booty pads and all of that, you know, it's not real. But
her mom makes her little booty pants for her. That's what kills me. Her mom cuts out all those costumes for her to prance around naked in. Like, really? Your mom does that for you?
I feel like, you know, you have Beyonce, she sung at the inauguration, but I doubt it if President Obama lets his daughters watch Rihanna and Beyonce's videos, because I don't believe that that's what he wants his daughters to portray.
Right.
I really seriously doubt that he lets them watch their videos.
Well, I think that he may let them, but then again, he and Michelle sit down and say, you know what? Let me tell you something right now. This is not real. You know, this is, you know, I think that they probably, I think, and that's where the parents are falling short, or the parent or whomever, when they're not talking to the children and they're not explaining to them that this is entertainment. It's called entertainment for a reason. Or am I wrong?
I agree on that point, because I don't think that parents are really stepping up and saying, okay, you know, there's nothing, even if Michelle and Barack Obama do allow Sasha and Malia to watch Beyonce and Rihanna, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if they're the parents, and if that's what they choose to let them listen to, that's fine. But at the same time, I'm sure Michelle and Barack Obama will sit down and say, okay, this is Beyonce and this is Rihanna or whoever else that may dress inappropriately, but this is not how you conduct yourself. This is entertainment, and entertainment is just what it is, entertainment. That has nothing, that has no bearings on your education or anything else. If you choose to follow in their footsteps, that's a personal choice that you make. But you can, it is possible for you to have these kind of people that you enjoy listening to or that you enjoy watching and still have, you know, some kind of sense up in your head, and you don't have to act the way they do. It's plain and simple. Just like you can grow up around a male or woman can grow up around, you know, if it's a male, he can grow up around a group of thugs, and he can turn out to be a doctor or a lawyer. Or you can be a female and grow up around a bunch of whores, and you can turn out to be, you know, you can be a straight up and down woman who is totally different. So it's all based on what you learn. It has nothing to do with who you listen to or who you look up to. I've always listened to, you know, so when I was younger, I was listening to Lil' Kim, and my mother would take my CDs from me when she heard it, and I would go out and buy them again at, you know, at 13 to 14 years old, or I would get them from somebody else. But at the same time, because of what my parents taught me and what my foundation is, I have never been like Lil' Kim. I've never wanted to be like Lil' Kim. I've never wanted to look like Lil' Kim. I don't even think Lil' Kim wants to be Lil' Kim. So, you know, that it is possible for you to listen to these people and still be your own person. It's all based on what you learn and how secure in yourself you are. You don't have to be like any of those people, because those people, they're like that for whenever, however long they're doing that show, and I guarantee you when they go home, they're just like me and you.
Yeah, they are, but a lot of kids just don't know that. But you're right that the parents do need to tell them that. I personally, I'm having daughters, and I do not want them to, I would not want them to watch that. I just feel like it's degrading, and I feel like once you put it on TV, you're promoting it.
But can you say 24/7, can you be there to see what your children are watching? No, you can't. The only thing you can do as their mother is, I understand what you're saying, but the only thing you can do as a mother is make sure that you instill in them the values that they need to make the right decisions. Because you, just like I said, my mother didn't want me listening to Lil' Kim, but I found a way to do it every time. There's no way you can stop a child from doing what they want to do. But you have to instill the values in them for them to be able to say, okay, yeah, I listen to this, or I might hang out with this person, or I may see this, but this is who I am, and this is what I'm going to do because this is what I know is right.
Right.
I had a friend who she told me that she has two sons and a daughter, but she told me that she will want all the kids to come to her house, her friend, her son's kids to come to, you know, her son's friends to come to her house because, you know, yes, it was she let her son have the you know, the friends come over and gave him the space, but also she wanted to see who were the type of people that they were hanging around. And I think that was a great, I personally don't like a whole lot of kids in my house, but when you put it that way, that's a way to ensure that you know who your kids are hanging around. Kids are very influential in, if they are, you know, I truly believe that the five people that you hang around are the people who you become, because they all, this is what you're constantly influenced by. You know, if your mother is a prostitute, that's what, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a prostitute, but if you're exposed to certain things, it's more likely that you will fall into it if you're exposed to it. I
have a brother who was an alcoholic, and I am nowhere near an alcoholic. That is not true. And I, yes. Like I said, I've hung out with people. I have some of my closest friends of the most promiscuous women, and I've grown up with these people since childhood. That, like I said, if you have the foundation behind you and you know who you are and you're not worried about trying to be like this person or trying to be accepted, you'll be fine. There's no reason that, you know, just because my mother's an alcoholic, I should be one too, or just because my best friend is sleeping around, that I should too, because actually my life may not be the best, but at the same time, some aspects of my life have turned out better than my friends because, you know, I choose not to open my legs to every man that I've been around. I've been out on dates with a lot of guys. Have I slept with them? No, because you don't have to do that. And when you let men know that, okay, from the first date, you already know this is not what it's going to be. If you like me, you're going to accept me for who I am, and if we get to that point, yeah, it'll happen. Okay, but it didn't get to that point because either I wasn't attracted to who they were and it had nothing to do with their looks. They may have been fine physically, but, you know, once I got to know who they were, they may not respect women the way I think they should, or they're not somebody that I would think would be, you know, a good family person. I wouldn't want to have children with these people. So, you know, it all plays into it. And you can grow up around, you know, whoever, as long as you know who you want to be and you're not a follower and you have your own mind, you can be around whoever. And it's not going to, like I said, it's not going to have any bearings on how you turn out, because if that's the case, I may have even been dead at this point, because I would, like I said, I would have been an alcoholic. I would have been sleeping around. I could have had STDs. I could have had a rack of kids. You know, it has nothing to do with that. But I know what my parents taught me growing up, and I know right from wrong, and I know what I am, and I'm not going to settle for. And, you know, now I'm married. I've been married for 6 years. And, you know, a lot of people at my age do not have that experience. I got married at 19. Has it been the easiest? No, but like I said, I knew what I wanted out of my life, and I knew how I wanted to be treated by a man, and that's why, you know, I'm still in the situation that I'm in. I have had my heart broken by males, you know, and it happens. But like I said, you don't turn into who these people want you to be, or you don't turn into who people think you should be. You be who you are, and you be who you know is, you know, who you know will get you where you need to be. Once you start falling victim to what people want from you and other people's expectations, that's when you get lost.
If someone wasn't living the lifestyle that I was living, or if they weren't, I didn't have anything in common with them, so there was no reason for me to be around them. And so I really lost interest in people when everybody was sneaking and going and getting high after school. I didn't hang around with those people because we had nothing in common. Now, had I did, you have peer pressure is very, very hard. But you have to, like you said, you have to have, your parents have to instill in you. You know, you're absolutely right. Just because, you know, you cannot hang around these people and turn into that But I just feel like if you are around it, you're more, it's more chances that you'll get more, that it will be exposed to you more and be more likely for you to do it. You don't have to, but it will be, you're putting yourself in a situation to where it could happen. And I know you can't.
But Autumn, you have to realize something as a parent. It's going to happen, and you as the parent need to have that type of relationship with your children, with your daughters, where they will know that you can talk to them and they can talk to you about anything. And, you know, my son will get back on here, and he'll tell you, you know, we've had our ups and downs, you know, but I think all in all, you know, this is the product of you know, the person that he's become is exceptional in this day and age when you're a black male and you got married at very, he got married, they got married, like she said, what, 19, 18, 19, when they got married. So, you know, but you have to, it's all about you as the parent. And you know, he'll say that there were times when I, you know, I probably said things and did things that he really didn't like. But had I not said and done some of those things, maybe he had gone down the wrong road, you know, or way down the wrong road. But, you know, I think that all in all, he turned out to be a very respectable young man, and he married a nice young lady. And it's not too often that you know, the stepmom gets along with the daughter-in-law, but I think that we do. You know, it's you have to understand that your daughters are going to have a lot more influence, and if they're cuter than buttons, they're going to have a lot of people after them, a lot of fellows. So you have to be their parent first, but then you have to be that person that they feel as though they can talk to as if you were a good friend. Not saying that you have to forget to be a parent and start to try to hang out and be their friend, but you have to be their, like, they have to be, have that sense of comfort that they can come to you and talk to you like they're, you know, your friend. We have about 3 minutes left. If you'd like to call in, 646-478-4726. We invite Tara to stay on for our after show. And, of course, if T would like to come back on, that'd be great, too. We have about 2 minutes now. We'll be playing the music and going into our after show. But, Autumn, you're going to be just fine. But you can't, the more that you try to protect the children and shield them from the world, the more curious they're going to become and the more effort they're going to put into going out there to find what you're trying to hide from them. Because you remember, we already said the children are very perceptive, they're very cunning, and they know how to figure out what they need and how to get it. So you have to make sure that you're being the parent. And I think the main thing tonight that we discovered is that these kids are being raised by the videos. They're not being raised by the parents. So it's time for the parents to come back home and stop clubbing themselves and coming in where they're bent over to the point where they just fall asleep and letting the kids raise, you know, the videos of raising these children. They don't have a role model nowadays. So, you know, the parents need to grow up at this point. They just need to grow up and be parents. And when those babies come, you're going to be prepared or take the classes or do whatever to help you, deal with it and to make sure that these kids understand that mommy has their best interests there, their best interests at heart. So that you know, it's one of those things where just because they're exposed to it don't mean that they're going to become a product of it. They're going to become right. The product of who you are and what you have taught them to become. So that's the realization of that, because, again, like Tara said, you know, she didn't become an alcoholic just because that's what she, you know, she was around. It just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And for someone to tell you that it does, you know, I dig deeper to find out exactly what their skill level was and how much attention they actually paid. Because, you know, I would never tell anybody give somebody advice that's the remedy for failure. That doesn't make sense. You know, and then you have to, if you want all the neighborhood kids in your house, not every child is good or created equal. So, therefore, some of these children are going to, they might steal something, or the parents might say, go there and say that her child touched him. The next thing you know, you have the police knocking on the door. You're in court trying to defend yourself for something that never happened. Or two kids decide to sneak off and they're, you know, doing something inappropriate in your bathroom. You go to jail for what? You know? Well, we have 10 seconds. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back here next week. Same time after the show is over, you can hear our archives. Good night, and we're going into our after show. I think we're getting ready to go into our after show, ladies. Yep, we are off air now. So back to our discussion. So, Autumn, don't let anyone tell you that, you know, to say, you know, just protect them, protect them, protect them. One thing you don't want to do is shield a child like that, because the minute if they can get a little taste of what's outside of that front door, they're going for it. They're going for it whether you like it or not. And then that's where the problem comes in at, because you don't want to, you know what it's like to be smothered. You know, it's like, I just got to get out and need to breathe. So you want, when those babies come, you talk to them from the time they come into this world to the time you sitting up there on their front row watching them walk down the aisle, and then after that, you still are going to be mommy. But, you know, it's what you instill in them.
I just feel like there was a lot of people. I went to a predominantly black school, and there was a lot of people who weren't, who had different lifestyles. They were raised different than me. And, you know, like I said before, you know, when, you know, weed was out, you know, I had plenty of time to go and smoke weed and go and skip school and do all that. But, and it was, you know, I knew people were doing it, people were selling drugs and stuff, but I chose not to do it. I chose not to hang around. Those people weren't my friends because, number one, I didn't have anything in common with them. I saw that they were skipping school. I saw that they were getting bad grades. And I just said, and I feel like had I been around them, it would be, you know, peer pressure. If I'm the only one not smoking weed, then I'm around these people who are doing it, it would be more likely for me to fall into that. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that I will, but if it's right in front of me, if I'm in a room full of drugs, it would be easier for me to be able to try it as opposed to not being around it and not having that as a pressure to me. Not to say that I could never get it if I wanted to, but I just feel like if something's not in your face, then it's less likely that you would indulge in it. Not to say that you can't, but it's less likely that you would. You know, if I'm not in the, if a man is not in my room, it's less likely for me to sleep with the man at this point in time if he's not there. I'll have to call, you know, come over there. It's you know, if something's in your face, it's more likely that you will indulge in, and that's all I was saying. It doesn't mean that I have to, but it's just if you're not exposed to certain things and if things are not in your face, it's less likely for you to take advantage of it. That's all I'm saying. But you don't have to. You know, I had strong enough will. You know, my grandmother raised me. I had strong enough will to say, these are the people that I don't want to be around. These are the people I have nothing in common with. I don't want to be what they are. So I chose not to be like them. And that's, you know, that's how, you know, and that's because my grandmother instilled that in me.
But again, your grandmother was there. She instilled that in you. And you can not have, I don't have cable or anything here because I don't watch TV enough to really need to pay for it. But your children are going to see Beyonce on the award shows. They're going to see the Rihannas and everybody on the entertainment shows that come on. They're going to see them on the news. And they're going to be curious because they go to school and their friends are going to be talking about them. So they're going to be exposed to it, whether it be in your house or when they go to school and their friends have their CDs playing them on, when they're on lunch or whatever, they're going to be exposed to it. So in order for them not to be creeping and sneaking when they go to school and then you find out a month later that they weren't in school or where they're supposed to be, you know, there's a way that you want to keep that line of communication open and let them know what is and is not acceptable. And then, you know,
right.
You know that you'll have to spot check those children. But to just, you know,
it's not about hiding it from them, because hiding it from them, you know, they're going to have that peer pressure. And one of them may come home and say, well, Mommy, you know, they said, are your twins identical or fraternal?
They don't know yet.
But, okay. Okay. If they're fraternal, one may come out lighter, one may come out darker, so that may be an issue. And then one is going to get picked on, or one may not. So these are the things that, you know, those are the questions where we get back into, so-and-so told me that I would be cute if I looked more like my sister, you know, or, you know, maybe if I look more like her, or Mommy, why don't I look like her? And that's when Mommy has to kick in and say, you know what, consider the sources that are telling you this, and you have to understand that you're beautiful in your own right. You know, your sister does her thing, you do your thing, but, you know, it's one of those issues that, you know, you're really going to have to be, and with society changing so much, you're really going to have to be vigilant and instilling in them their particular self-worth.
That's why I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm having girls, because it seems like if you have a boy that, yeah, they're going to have peer pressure, but it's not going to be, you're not, it just seems like it would be a lot easier to have a son than a daughter, you know,
Uh-oh.
Have periods Uh-oh. And all that stuff.
Uh-oh. Tara, you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, and before I actually had two sons, I actually believe that myself. A girl seems so much easier. I'm a woman. I can relate to
really?
Her when it, menstrual cycles, when it comes to her growing up, me buying her girly things. We can hang out and do girly stuff. And, you know, sometimes I still miss the fact that I can't do that, but at the same time, I realize now that boys are not as easy as they seem. It seems like, okay, well, instead of getting up in the morning and you having to do hair and all that kind of stuff, you can just ahead, put their clothes on and move on. But outside of that, nothing is easy. That's about the easiest part that you'll get out of it, because they're boys, they're going to do things, they're going to have a whole different set of issues, but at the same time, there could be issues. Like I had my seven-year-old, he's in first grade, and this comes into, this goes into when you were saying, you know, you wouldn't want your daughter to indulge in certain, you know, activities or whatever. But I have a seven-year-old, and certain things he didn't do before he went to school. And he's tried to come home and do the talking back, or he's tried to yell at me because he may have seen somebody else do it. And, you know, we'll have our falling out over that. And then he'll get past that phase. But it's like I said, once again, that goes into what you learn at home, because when you go to school, you cannot control, unless you're going to sit in class with them all day, you can't control what they're exposed to. You can control everything in your house. But once they get outside of those doors, you can't control that. And for me, I can only speak on me. Me and my brother, I'll use for an example. We were both sheltered growing up. My mother, like I said, it was more her than my father, but she wanted to shield me from everything. And when it came to sex, you know, there was no talking to my mother. I attempted one time, and she shut me out. She told me I was going to be a virgin until I was 18, just like she was. And she didn't even know at the time that I came and asked her for birth control. I was already having sex, but I couldn't tell her that. So my mother didn't find out I was having sex until I got pregnant at 17. And you know why that was? Because I didn't have, not saying that if she had talked to me, I wouldn't have been pregnant, but my mother did not allow me to feel comfortable enough to come to her and talk to her about sex. Why? Because she was shielding me from, she wanted to control me. Even the older I got, the more controlling she got. And there were certain things that my mother just didn't realize I was going to do anyway. Some things you have to learn through experience. Sex was one, you know, even if I was only with one person, it was still, you know, it wasn't always protected. And then there's the chance that you'll get pregnant. So there's certain, like I said, my mother had, she always talked about it, that you're just going to be a virgin and you're just, you know, this is it. But because she made me feel uncomfortable, I didn't get to the point. I just went out and did my thing, and I tried to be protected. And like I said, there were times where I wasn't, and then I wound up pregnant. Do I regret it? No. And like I said, it's a learning experience for me. But at the same time, you know, with the music and everything else, she wanted to shield me from music. She wanted to shield me from the, you know, the rated R movie. She wanted to shield me from sex. She wanted to shield me from other people's children. If they didn't have the same values I did, or if they carried themselves a certain way, she didn't want me to be around them. And for me, mm-hmm. it was like the more she tried to control me, the more I wanted to pull away. And, like, even when you were talking about the drugs, I used to hang out with people who smoked weed all day long. Never once have I smoked weed in my life. So, it, or like I said earlier, it all just depends on what you want to do. If you want to fall victim to peer pressure, then that's what you're going to do. Some people are just not strong enough to say no. But then you do have people who are strong enough. And, you know, like I said, for me being shielded all my life, I mean most of my childhood, when I became an adult, I got married at 19, and I was still, I thought I was grown, but I didn't learn. It took me a while. I'm still learning that I depended on my parents so much because they provided everything for me, and they didn't want me to learn the harsh realities of the world as a young child. So I learned all this stuff as an adult. Some of these things that I'm learning now are things that I should have been experiencing as a teenager. So when you shield your child, you really have to think about it. Am I benefiting them, or am I you know, enabling them to push away from me and become, you know, you could potentially harm your child by doing that.
Right. So I know that one thing, my being raised by my grandmother, we didn't talk about sex. But she didn't. But I can agree with you. With you're saying that she kind of closed the door of communication to you. But I feel like had maybe she talked to me about it, it would have been, I probably would have waited longer than what I had, when it came to the point where I was wanting to have sex or I liked someone, I would feel more comfortable talking to her. So I can see that. It's not like, I guess it's just, you know, what I need to know is just, I just have to be able to allow my daughter to be able to feel comfortable talking to me and sharing with me. So do you think that, I don't know, because I don't have the experience, but I'm wondering, had she talked to me at a young age about sex, would I have waited longer? Or would I, you know, if I was more cautious about it and more, you know, had more information about it, I wonder if it would have been, if the experience would have been different, if I would have been more careful, if I would have used, you know, protection, if I would have, you know, waited. I don't know anyone who actually sat down and talked to their kids about sex at a young age. And if they did, what's the proper age to talk to them about it? And how do you talk to your daughter, if you had a daughter, about sex, but not make her curious and want to do it? You know, should you talk to them, you know, before their hormones start, before they start their periods? Or, I mean, it's just a lot of questions that I want to know, because I'm having two girls, and I just know everything that I had to come across, and I just don't want them to have to fall into, you know, the same type of situations I had, or situations I never experienced. So only thing that I see is, well, I want to know who they're going to hang around, and you know, I was even thinking about homeschooling my kids, because it's like, I don't want them to have to go through any unnecessary pain and suffering if they don't have to.
But you're talking about, now you're talking about the can't watch videos, you want to homeschool them. Eventually, they're going to get to the point where they're going to want to go outside, walk down the sidewalk, and go around the block. So either you're going to leave them out where they're going to run out, and it's going to be total culture shock, where they're to the point where, wow, oh my gosh, I got to find it, oh my goodness. You can't shield children from every single thing. But as far as talking to them, you know, the question isn't what we think. The question is, looking back on your life in hindsight, do you think had someone, whether it be your family member or counselor or someone, explain to you the ramifications of sex and all of that, would you have handled
you know, your life, you know, would you have made different choices in your life? You spoke to us about when you were telling us your story a few weeks ago. I have to give a special shout out to the Miss Laugh-A-Lot. She was in the chat earlier, and I had asked her, was she a first time listener? So she's in the chat room. So ladies, you all can say hello to Miss Laugh-A-Lot. She is in the chat room right now. She just got back to me. So I was trying to say hello to her when we were on air, but we'll give her a shout out. If you come back next week, we'll say hello to you again. We have 15 minutes, so let's keep it going.
I really don't know, Marita. I don't know because I really don't know. I don't know. Because then again, you know, I got raised by my grandmother, and she's old school, so I don't know had I got raised by my mom. You know, I really can't answer that question. I really don't know because I don't know if my grandmother would have been religious and been like, you know, you're a Christian and you were raised this way. I don't know how she would have responded to me. I don't know. I really can't say yay or nay. But I do know that, you know, I can't even answer that question. But
well, what were you thinking, like, as far as I know the story of your grandmother, she had multiple children by multiple different men, and she raised them by herself. So
was she ashamed
of that, and she didn't talk about, you know, what sex was? I mean, you were promiscuous as a younger girl. I don't know how old grandmother was when she had her first child, but, you know, was she thinking that if she didn't talk about it, then the same thing wouldn't happen to you?
No, my grandmother went through a lot of different stuff. Like, she was raped, and, you know, she had different kids by different men, but it was a different time back then. And when I started having sex, I was under the impression that it was what I was supposed to do because, I mean, it was my only way of getting that attention that I felt that I needed because I had issues with, you know, I felt unattractive and, you know, my issues were different. You know, I wasn't prone to going to have sex. I mean, going to smoke weed and stuff like that. And then when me and you started having sex, it was like, I think that, you know, I don't know if your parents talked to you about it or if your mom talked to you about it, but it just, I can't say either way, you know, whether if I was able to talk to grandmother about it, would I had changed my mind? You know, would you have changed your mind if your mom would have talked to you about it? Would you have saved? I mean, would you think you would have saved yourself?
My mother did talk with me about it, and she knew that I was, you know, I wasn't listening to what she said, but there was one thing that she said to me that still to this day has always stuck in my head, and I swear to you, it rings true so many times. She said to me, a man, a boy, you know, a male, will say anything to you to get in your pants. And
yeah,
as an adult,
that
still plays out. But no, like anything
that, but
drastic. Like they love you, you know, and really, you know, really, I don't even want to admit, you know, that I've fallen the victim of that lately. But, like, really, it does happen. And, you know, once you put yourself out there like that and you don't get to know somebody and you're dating and looking for a future with that person, you know, it kills it. I believe it kills it. Like, the best relationships I've ever had was with men where I didn't sleep with them or I didn't sleep with them until much, much, much later. I think, you know, again, it's part of the media. You know, it's part of, you know, measuring up to something or, you know, feeling like, you know, there's sex being thrown about this way and that. Well, I'll keep him if I can fill that image and that fantasy for him. But in reality, you know, next, you know, men rather.
I would say the extent of it was like, okay, you know, when we were in middle school, grandmother showed that that video about STDs. I think
right.
That was the extent
of her talking to about, you know, talking of me hearing her say anything about it. But by that time, we had already had sex. But
right.
But it didn't, I mean, it was scary. Of course, you know, it was very graphic and scary. And but, you know, I don't know. It's like, okay, for instance, like, you know, you like I remember when I was smoking, I started smoking cigarettes. And, you know, my mom had told me when I got a job, she said, you know, Autumn, your generation, you shouldn't even be smoking cigarettes, because when you're in school, that's when the whole, you know, the don't smoking and smoking
class
that, all those,
baby.
Yeah, that whole I don't know, the advertisements of not smoking and smoking kills came out, so your generation shouldn't be smoking. So, she didn't smoke cigarettes, but I guess I'm kind of, like, fearful that I just don't want my daughters to have to go through something, certain things that I went through. You know, I didn't use drugs or anything because I saw what drugs did to people, and I didn't want to be like that, but sex was taboo. You know, we didn't talk about it. It was something that you wanted to keep undercover. You didn't want to get a reputation. You didn't want no one to know that you were doing it. And 9 times out of 10, you were sleeping with the same guy your friend was, or, you know, because they meant boys were sleeping with everybody. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know whether you should talk to them early or talk to them when they're in fifth grade or what. I don't know. I really can't tell. I know, you know, certain things. I don't know. I guess I feel like when I went to Buckman, a predominantly white school, and it was a talent, it was a performing arts school, sex wasn't an issue there because there were so many different activities I was in. But when I went to Whitaker, it wasn't a lot of activities, and although my grandmother was a counselor there, it was the type of people there was, it was more, it was, you know, having sex or, you know, trying to have a boyfriend was the main issue. You know, that's all children talked about. So I really don't know. I really can't say, you know, had I talked about it, would have been different. But I do understand that, you know, one thing I do get just from talking to different women about having kids is to be able to allow your kids to talk to you about anything.
Hold on,
okay.
We have Tony's trying to chime in. Go ahead. Are you there, Tony?
Yeah. As far as guys saying things to women that you know, just to get with them, that's gonna happen. And you know that women just growing up, I guess it comes a point where some of them learn how to, when a guy is not being sincere and when he's not, and a lot of that, it comes from trial and error, you know, and that goes both ways. But that's going to happen. You know, not every guy's going to be 100%, you know, truthful, especially when he's trying to sleep with a woman, because it's all a competition. It's a big competition, you know. You got to be the best guy that makes it ahead of the pack, you know. You got to do this a certain way or say this a certain way, and not saying that everything is a lie, but everything isn't the truth at the same time. And some guys take it to the extreme, and some guys are worse than others. But, I mean, that's just part of life, and, you know, you take your bumps and your scrapes and you keep rolling.
But
how do men feel about sleeping with different women? Is it their ego, or do you guys still use, do you feel like a woman feels like, gosh, I just shared myself with this person I don't care about, and, you know, I don't know. I guess right now I'm to the point where I don't want no one to touch me, because it's like, you feel, it's like degrading to me. Like, you're not worthy to touch me. Do men ever feel that way? I mean, is it true that men will sleep with anyone that will let them sleep with them? I mean, do you guys ever get a conscience and say, no, I wouldn't dare sleep with you?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are that way, and I've known of guys who don't really care. It's all about how many women they've been able to sleep with, and I know guys who have had some sort of some standards with who they would and would not sleep with, and it goes both ways. So some guys will be like, you know what, I'm going to sleep with this amount of women or however many women I can get with. And some guys just have that restraint. And like I said, I've met guys that are, both ways. And when I was back in high school, when I was younger, it was more of, I want to sleep with many, many different women, or chicks at the same time. But it was like, I was different back then, and sex was new to me, and it was refreshing, and, I enjoyed doing it. But some guys still have that mentality and haven't gotten out of that. And some guys, maybe some guys just get off on the fact that they can manipulate so many women and get them to get to sleep with them. And maybe it's a self-esteem issue. It's a lot of reasons as to why that happens. But it does.
Tony, I'd like to ask you something. So I know a lot of women experience, like, the regret thing. Like, for me, after sharing a home with two different men, like, I feel like I'll never be able to get that back. And they've had every intimate corner of me. And, like, it sickens me to think that they can live with that memory and they have that piece of me. Do men have that sense of regret to where they're like, dang, I wish she, didn't know every corner of me, and I just feel kind of robbed, Like, do men get that, or is that just a woman thing?
Men get it too. They get it too. I don't know whether it happens as much as it does with women, but it happens with men too. I've gone through it. It's some females that I've been with sexually that I wish I hadn't been with, and a lot of guys, guys that I've known have expressed the same thing. It's always the crazy chick that they slept with that, ended up, stealing their credit card or keying their car or something, And
well, aside from, like, the crazy ones, just, like, the act of sharing yourself with somebody that you didn't intend to be with forever,
Devoting, wasting time.
Right.
Without
the drama behind it,
Right. I'm sorry?
I said without there being drama behind it, like without there being any negative force, like say, you had a one-night stand or, a three-night stand or however many stands you have with somebody and you walk past that person, you bump into them accidentally at the mall and you're like, dang, I wish that person wouldn't have seen me naked,
Yeah, I've heard of that before. A lot of times with guys, it's more of a joking type thing than it is a real serious issue, but it has come up before, things of that nature.
Well, how do men feel about women who they sleep with and, they're pregnant by, they get the woman pregnant, and then after the fact, they're like, well, I don't want to have a child by this woman. I don't want to have a child. I'm not ready to have kids. But you slept with this person, and you basically gave that person the power to decide your future and your fate. So do you feel regret when there's obligation behind it, or do you feel like, okay, well, I slept with someone I wasn't with, I didn't want to be with, and it was just a waste of time, and it's okay because I'll never have to see her again.
Autumn, we're going to have to cut it up. We have 1 minute left. We have a little less than 1 minute. I think what we're going to do is pick this up. Tony, if you don't mind, you can be a guest for us next week. We can pick this up again, and if you know any friends that want to chime in, some more males, they can do that too. We have a couple of seconds left, so we're going to have to end the show right now, and we'll pick it up next week. This will be a continuum for next week, Tony.
Okay.
Tara, thank you so much for calling in. Autumn and Rebecca, as always, good show. We'll see you all back here again next Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern time. Tony, if you like, we could feature you as our guest. So you let me know.
All right, I'll look
you up. All righty.
Okay. Well, good night, and I'll see you all back here next week.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.